Hello, I'm Dr. Lucy Blue, and this is the Dive and Dig in-depth podcast. Today, I'm taking you down deep inside amphoras, the transport containers of the ancient world. As you will discover, I'm not the greatest fan of amphora. Give me a ship hull or a silted harbour to examine any day over a piece of broken pot. But in this episode, we will learn more about the important role that amphora played in ancient maritime trade. We will discover when and why they were made, what they looked like, and importantly, what they were doing as cargo in the hulls of ancient ships. With me to tell you more about amphora than you could possibly imagine is my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Stella Domestica from the University of Cyprus. She and her team have found hundreds of amphora, clay jars packed head to tail like sardines, in the hull of the late classical period Mazotos shipwreck off the Cypriot coast. Later, I'm joined by Dr. Cynthia Ann Spiteri, who works her scientific skills like a magician and reveals more secrets held within the fabrics of these ceramic vessels. Well, I can't believe I'm actually asking you questions about pots, because as you know, they're not necessarily my favourite subject. But I wanted to talk to you about amphora, which is a subject which I know is very dear to your heart. And really just to explore a bit about why and when people built amphora, or made amphora rather, and what they look like, because not everybody listening is necessarily going to know what an amphora is. And what were they doing on ships?
They were made for transport by sea. They eventually had a shape that didn't work at all on land, because you couldn't just leave them standing on a flat surface, but it was perfect for a ship's hold, because this narrow base could be wedged between either among any kind of material they were using to protect the hold, the ship from the merchandise, or because they were stowing them in tiers, then they were using this very narrow base to wedge the upper part, the upper tier containers among the shoulder or the neck of the lower tier ones.
So they're sort of slotting them in to the...
Exactly, oh. Exactly. And that's why as the trade connections were more and more often and larger and larger quantities of them were transported, then the containers themselves were manufactured on an industrial scale for antiquity standards, of course, and they had this distinctive shape that we all recognize with, they have different sizes, but the shape is more or less standard. They have a narrow neck or a narrow mouth. They are oval shaped or conical, their body, with wider shoulders, and then the body is narrowing toward the base, and with two handles either on the shoulder or from the neck to the shoulder. That's the typical typical transport amphora shape.
You're saying that they predominantly were carrying liquids. As I understand it, certainly on board boats, wine or oil. So how did they keep the liquid in the amphora? How did they stop it sort of, running all over the ship's hull?
Oh, yes. Very good question, because first of all, the mouth, the orifice had to be narrow because it should be stoppered somehow. And there were different ways for stoppering containers in antiquity. They were using either pieces of wood with pitch or other kind of sealants. And the sealants were important because they were also using them to seal the walls, the interior of these pots, because pottery containers are porous. So especially wine could go through these pores and, they could lose material, but most importantly, the air that would come in would contaminate the wine. So they had to be sealed, and they were using these sealants from resin or peach that, and they were covering the interior, and most probably they were using these sealants to seal the stoppers as well. So they were very well sealed in order not to have accidents.
Yes, indeed. Wouldn't want to lose your wine consignment, would you?
And especially you don't want a ship full of flooded with wine.
Well, yeah. So, okay, these amphora are made from pottery, from ceramic, but presumably there are certain types of clay that is good for making pots and others. So, and I know that different amphora take on different shapes. How does this, you know, we're thinking about quite a long duration of time coming from different parts of the Mediterranean. So presumably after a while you could sort of distinguish where your wine or your oil was coming from by the different ceramic or the shape of the amphora.
Yes, this is the typology of the amphora, as we call them, because and it's a very important aspect of what we call amphora studies. As you know, it exists. It's a domain you don't like, but it exists. So the typology is the way we classify the different containers according to their shape mainly, and if we know more, their fabric and provenance. So we have to understand which pottery tradition these containers belong to so that we have a first impression where they come from and how they date. And of course, as I said before, they were a very special kind of container, but they were made by potters, local potters, and so they followed local styles and manufacturing trends. And as we in archaeology, we have managed to map these different trends and manufacturing details that could tell us that an amphora could come from the Aegean or could come from the Central Mediterranean or could be Bronze Age or Roman period. So we pay attention to these details and we create typologies and we use them for our first classification and dating.
No, I mean, it's, as you say, it's the basis for archaeological dating, but also regional affiliations. I mean, and nowadays, of course, we have lots of other ways of providing chronology and dates to things, but that's essentially the core way that we've approached it from the very beginning. It's critical, really, isn't it? And I think your amphoras have, as much as, you know, they're incredibly useful. I will acknowledge that.
Well, yes, I have to say that I often use this analogy, and I say that they are the alphabet of the maritime archaeologist, because that's the first thing we see in the water, and we cannot wait for scientific analysis before we assess a site and understand where a ship is coming from or what date, where it's dated. So yes, indeed, that's how we use them.
No, absolutely. And the other thing is, of course, there are lots of them. They preserve really well underwater.
Ceramics are very resilient in time. They're not like organic materials or metals that have several issues with preservation, especially in the water. So since they were not affected, they are not affected so dramatically by the environmental conditions, they are there and we can find them. But also they were they were used very often for in seaborne trade, and not always because Area A didn't have olive oil or wine and wanted to import it from Area B, for example, but because people, as they do today, they like to taste several wines from several areas, from several regions, different tastes, and less with olive oil, but this was the case too. So this was one of the main reasons behind all these, the big numbers of amphora cargoes. Also, transport amphora, i.e. wine and olive oil and other contents that we know of them, they were used over periods of time systematically for the provisions of the army or the big cities, especially in the Roman period. So that's why large shipments of them were sent from certain areas toward either army camps or cities. And that's why we have all very, very many of them. And maybe most people have heard of Monte Testaccio in Rome, which is a hill made of discarded amphora that people were just tempted and they didn't know what to do with them anymore because there were so many.
No, it's amazing. It's some of this massive garbage hill, essentially, isn't it, of pottery. And it's just like, what? This is a Roman hill of garbage.
Exactly. That's what it is. That's what it is. Although they really reuse them extensively, again, you know, because you've excavated a construction, a port construction made with them, but also they were used in buildings, but also in the household they were used as storage containers, although they were made for transport, as we do today with plastic bottles or glass jars. We buy them as packaging containers of a certain product, so they were not made for transport, but we reuse the container at home as much as long as we can in a different ways because we have it. It's just there, available.
Yeah, ancient recycling until they're eventually thrown away onto a large pile of rubbish in the middle of Rome. Now, I know I'm not the greatest fan of amphora, but Stella not only brings them alive, but also reminds us how important they are, both with regard to understanding archaeological types and dating. However, if we go beyond that first level of identification provided by pottery shape, we learn that scientific analysis can reveal even more information, as I discovered when I spoke to scientist Dr. Cynthiane Spiteri. Cynthiane examines small samples scraped from inside the amphora and looks for various substances, including lipids. Of course, my first question was, what's a lipid? And this was her answer.
Lipids are a diverse group of compounds, really, and they include oils and fats. And we're all familiar with these. They are very important to the body. They're used as energy stores. Fat under the skin also helps insulate, and so it helps keep us warm. And they're also used in cell membranes for structural purposes. So they're a very, very wide and diverse group of compounds. In ancient times, people were cooking in ceramics. Ceramics are quite porous, and lipids would have become absorbed inside the ceramic during use. And this is what we target then for our analysis. And we target lipids because they are very strong biomolecules that tend to survive over very long periods of time. And this is because they are very strong molecules. They have a very strong structure. They're also hydrophobic, and they are quite resistant to heat. So when we do our analysis, the first thing that we need to do, of course, is to take our sample. And to take our sample, we need to drill into the ceramic. So we choose where on the pot we are going to sample from. And then the first thing that we need to do is use a drill to clean lightly the surface of the ceramic. So we clean the area on the vessel that we are going to sample. We discard this cleaning, so it's a very light drilling. And then after this is done, we then take about 2 grams of ceramic to test. And the testing really involves the extraction of the lipids. So as we were saying before, lipids are hydrophobic, so we can't use anything water-based. So the reagent that we use is organic. So organic dissolves in organic. And we have quite a few different extraction protocols that we use, depending on the lipid molecules that we are targeting. Some lipids bind more tightly than others to the ceramic matrix, and this is why we have different extraction protocols. So by looking at the lipids that were absorbed within the ceramic matrix, we are trying to reconstruct what their content was. And this could be something in the range of oils or animal fats or perhaps even wine. And by combining content analysis together with other techniques which are being applied also to study these amphorae, so for example, petrography, we hope to also find the origin of the, well, where these amphorae were constructed, to hopefully shed a bit more light also on where these contents were being produced.
Wow, amazing what you can learn from a small sample scraped from the inside of a ceramic jar, and why amphoras come in such a variety of shapes and sizes. It's truly incredible that substances like lipids are not completely destroyed after 2,500 years of being under the sea. Am I becoming an amphora convert? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this Dive and Dig in-depth podcast, supported by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that promotes maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. If you want to learn more about the excitement of maritime archaeology, then join me, Dr. Lucy Blue, for a brand new series of Dive and Dig podcasts, scheduled to be launched in 2022. Thanks for listening.